Callum's voice carried in it the tinge of fear. Rose could feel countless pairs of wild eyes focused on them. The fear on her nape rose stiffly.
I have a feeling I'm not going to like this game, Martin.
The young mouse held her paw tighter.
Blanket from your mind, Rose. Think of Noonvale.
Reaching the first ledges, they helped one another up, ready to run should the Gore tribe show any sign of pursuit. Sandy rock crumbled beneath their paws, and slivering pieces of shale slid away down the mountainside. Two more small ledges to go. Martin dug his sword into a crack to aid his progress, leaning over the ledge and helping Rose to haul Grum up. Palin pushed the mole from behind. Grum scrabbled his way onto the ledge, not daring to look down at the crowd far below, still standing, silent and waiting.
I don't mind undergrounds, but I ain't too fond of hoop year.
Palin nearly tripped and fell backwards on the final ledge. He was windmilling his paws as he teetered perilously at its rim. Acting quickly, Rose swung the food pack. The hedgehog caught the shoulder strap, and she hauled him back to the safety of the ledge. Now the Gore tribe were beginning to chant and dance again, eager to be on the chase. The four friends stood on the ledge which Martin had nominated, watching them. Martin took the pack from Rose and shouldered it.
Are we ready?
They nodded. Palin spat on his paws and rubbed them together.
Right, Martin, give them the signal.
The young mouse stared down at the dancing hordes below.
Look at them. Mad, cruel beasts. Playing games with the lives of other creatures. I wouldn't waste my breath shouting signals to the scum. Let them guess whether or not the game has begun.
The four friends took off as fast as they could, up the mountainside to the cave high above. It took several seconds for the dancing, yelling mob to realise they had been cheated. Martin had not shouted the signal for them to start chasing. With a concerted howl of rage, the masses of squirrels dashed for the mountain, waving their axes. From the heights, the four friends paused to glance down. Martin had been right. Gore tribe squirrels were strong and fleet of paw. They were climbing at an amazing rate, everyone agile and swift. The game for the lives of the travellers had really begun.
Book 3. The Battle of Marshank.
Chapter 28.
Brome and Keeler, together with Feldo and the rambling Rosehip players, were the heroes of the hour. The 30 or so slaves who had escaped from Marshank with their aid cheered wildly, towing them round and round the camp on their cart. Being actors, the Rosehip Company enjoyed applause in any form. Balor took outrageously leggy bows, clapping his ears together comically.
Thank you, dear creatures. Thank you, one and all.
Roanoke smiled benevolently, waving a huge paw.
Oh, you shouldn't. Really, it was nothing.
Buckler, with one paw bound up against his injured shoulder in a sling, bobbed his furry head up and down.
Thank ye. I'll be right as rain in a few days.
The rest of the company took their adulation gracefully, with the exception of Celandine, who fluttered her eyelashes constantly and blew outrageously sloppy kisses.
Wasn't I marvellous, dears? I'd like to thank the rest of the troop and all the other little creatures who helped me.
Brome was up on the cart with the rest, but Feldo was unused to such admiration. He wandered off alone from the camp, enjoying the warm evening as he savoured the heady feeling of freedom. Back at camp, the liberated slaves were marvelling at the ample larder kept by the troop. A mouse called Purslane led her husband, Groot, and their baby, Fuffle, through an inventory of the contents.
Look, Groot, dried fruits and maple cream. How many seasons since we tasted maple cream? I can't remember. Oh, my! Will you smell these violet crystals and candied mint leaves?
Groot opened the box, shaking his head fondly.
Nuts, preserved in honey. Chestnuts, beech nuts, and acorns. Do you recall when we used to do them in late autumn, dear?
Purslane brushed away a tear as she laughed.
Do I? You were the one who kept eating the nuts and licking the honey ladle. You were like a great babe. Fuffle, put those nuts down. They don't belong to us.
The baby Fuffle gurgled around a mouthful of nuts.
Taste is nice. Fuffle likes some.
Purslane was prizing the nuts loose from his little paws when Roanoke, who had deserted the victory parade, swept Fuffle up in a huge paw. She smiled fondly.
You eat as many as you like, little un. What is ours is yours.
Purslane and her husband thanked the badger profusely, but Roanoke would hear none of it.
Now that's enough of that, good creatures. Purslane, did I hear Groot saying that you could preserve nuts?
Pursley engaged at the huge larder and its contents longingly.
Preserved nuts? I could cook, bake, stew, make soups, salads, flans, cakes, tarts, trifles.
Roanoke held up a paw.
Trifles, that's one thing the rosehip players can't do, make a decent trifle. My dear, you don't know how many seasons I have dreamed of trifle. But listen, don't stand there telling me how good a cook you are. Why not get cracking and make a victory feast? I imagine there are others from Marshank who'd love to try their kitchen skills again.
Purslane, Guillaume, Ferndew and a hedgehog goodwife called Berwin washed their paws and went to work. Night fell over the rosehip's camp. The fires blazed merrily, and old songs were brought forth to sing, as every beast helped with the preparation of a great liberation meal. The young mouse Hoopoe, wearing a ridiculous hat woven from sedge grass, led the singing, conducting with a long onion shoot.
Hey, give me cake and bring me ale and pudding ripe with plums. Some cider, dear, so cool and clear to swill round teeth and gums. Some round and golden mellow cheese and light brown nut bread, if you please. With honey made by happy bees, and I'll be contented. Oh, fie the creature with long face who nibbles small and can't keep pace. With tartlets filled full berry fruit and yellow meadow cream to boot. Or soup with pepper and hot root and burdock ale to quench it. Oh, eat up, neighbour, drink up, friend, may good fortune have no end. Success to all that you intend, and leave the pot till morning.
The feast was one to remember, particularly since the freed slaves had young ones who had never attended a banquet, or even seen some of the dishes, let alone tasted them. Old Guillaume sniffed as she passed Roanoke a fall of hot barley bread filled with brown onion gravy and mashed turnip.
Just look at that little un dipping strawberry tart into his soup. It's not right.
The baby Fuffle was seated on Roanoke's lap, enjoying himself immensely. The badger chuckled as she strokes his ears.
Oh, if it tastes nice to him and he likes it, then where's the harm? Ooh, you eat up, your little rogue.
The two mice, Yarrow and Hoopoe, had purple lips and noses from drinking blackberry cordial, and yellow meadow cream tipped their ears, from where they had both been eating the same pudding out of a basin without using spoons or paws. Celandine wiped her mouth daintily on a flimsy kerchief.
Oh, goodness me, I don't think I can manage another bite.
Balor eyed her plate, heaped high with summer salad and cheese.
I was just saying to Castan and Gauchi the other day that you're looking a touch plump these days, Miguel, what?
The vain pretty squirrel pushed herself away from the food.
Am I really? Tell the truth, Balor. I'd hate to be plump.
Balor pulled her plate across and emptied it reflectively, speaking between bites.
Yes. Well, a touch more exercise, bit of firewood chopping, and you'll be back to your former lovely slim self, my dear. I wouldn't worry too much.
Gauchi and Caston sat gazing sadly at a beautiful damson flan topped with crisp thin pastry covered in white rose cream and decorated with candied mint leaves and nuts. They were poised over it, holding a wooden spoon apiece, sighing regretfully.
Golly gosh, it does look lovely. Far too nice to eat.
I agree with you. It'd be a shame to spoil it, really.
But some other creature will if we don't.
True, true. I know. Let's do it gently.
Brawn sat next to Buckler, sharing a beetroot and mushroom pasty, an enormous thing swimming in leek gravy.
Brr, I can feel it doing my shoulder a power of good.
Huh, there's nothing wrong with your other shoulder. It's doing the work of two. Stop shoving me out of the way, you great hungry beast.
Trefoil had an apple baked in honey. Each time she looked away, a piece of it went missing. Roanoke winked at the baby Fuffle as he licked honey from his paws.
Good, eh, mate?
Fuffle winked back with both eyes.
Good for Fuffle.
Old Barkjohn accepted a platter of summer fruits from Guillaume. He picked at them as he gazed at the other revellers.
I don't see my son. Have you served him with food, Guillaume?
He was hanging around at the edge of the camp before dark. Never sat down to eat with the rest. I suppose we're not good enough for him.
Brougham left his pasty to Buckler and spoke up in defence of his friend.
Don't you speak about Feldo like that, old one. If it weren't for him and Keeler, you'd still be a slave.
Guillaume bustled off in a huff. Barkjohn smiled at the young mouse.
Well said, Brougham. You're a true friend to my son. Have you seen him?
Brougham gathered up some food a wedge of plum cake, a hunk of brown nut cheese, a small fresh-baked wheat fowl and a jug.
I haven't seen him, sir, but I know where he'll be. Doing a lone patrol and keeping watch for foe beasts, while we sit here filling our bellies. I'll go and find him with this food. He must be hungry wandering the cliffs by himself.
Feldo laid his javelins and thrower down. He sat with his back to a rock at the cliff's edge, staring out at the calm sea and the star-strewn sky. Though he was savouring freedom, the sturdy young squirrel was fighting down a rage that burned deep inside, against the seasons he and his father had spent in captivity. Hatred of Badrang and all the tyrants stood for gnawed at him. The sound of some beast close by drew his paws swiftly to the weapons on the ground.
Feldo, is that you, mate?
The squirrel sighed as he relaxed his hold on the javelins.
Oh, Brome, what are you doing out here?
The young mouse sat beside him and laid out the food.
Brought you a bite of supper. Are you hungry?
Feldo accepted the food gratefully.
Well, young Brome, that was a reckless, foolish thing you did. But no one can deny that you showed great courage. No one can deny that.
Red currant and roseleaf cordial. I hope you like it.
Feldo balanced the jug on his elbow.
Like it? Does a fish like water?
They sat together watching the sea and the night sky. Brome sighed and voiced aloud the thought that tormented him constantly whenever he looked out over the deep waters of the main.
I often look at the sea these days and wonder if Martin, Grum and my sister made it to land. I'd hate to think of them lying somewhere out there underneath the waves.
What a silly notion.
Feldo chuckled as he punched Brome's paw lightly.
They probably made it to land while we were still floundering about thinking of the idea. Listen, mate, if your sister and Grum are with Martin, they're safe as a deep-rooted oak. That mouse has more warrior spirit in his left ear than most creatures I've ever come across. Why, I wouldn't be surprised to see them come marching across those cliffs right now, with the Noonvale army behind them.
Brome looked out along the cliffs, as if taking Feldo at his word. Suddenly he pointed north.
Look, there is some beast coming. About a dozen of them, I'd say.
Two weasel trackers, Bugpaw and Flink, knelt to scan the ground in the moonlight. Hisk watched them impatiently.
What's the matter with you two? Surely the two wheel tracks of a loaded cart are clear enough to follow.
Bugpaw looked up at the captain.
The cart has been along here more than once, Hisk. We're looking for the freshest set of tracks.
Flink traced the rutted outlines with his paw.
Buggy's right, and it's double hard in the night. We could be following our own tails. Why don't you knock off and rest up? It'll be a lot easier tracking in daylight, Hisk.
There was a concerted murmur of agreement from the others. The weasel captain took a pace back and brought his spear up.
What's all this? A mutiny? Dig the dirt out your ears and listen to me. I'm Lord Bedrang's captain. If you disobey me, you're disobeying him. The orders is to follow the cart tracks and find out where they goes. And that's what I intend doing. Right, does any beast want to argue it out with Lord Badrang when we get back to Marshank?
There was a shuffling of paws and some sullen muttering.
All right, Hisk, you made your point.
A voice from the group called out.
Let's get on with it.
I'm glad you see it my way. Oh, and by the way, only Lord Badrang calls me Hisk. It's Captain Hisk to you lot. Remember that.